It is a state capitol report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. About 9 in 10 Americans say political divisions have become so fraught, so polarized, so bitter that it runs the risk of politically motivated violence. That's from Friday's Washington Post ABC News poll. Over 6 in 10 respondents were very concerned about a heightened risk of politically motivated violence in our country. Join in on mixing anger and politics. What stands out to you? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ryan Martin is a psychology professor at UW Green Bay. He is an anger researcher. Ryan, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much for having me.
Why does politics elicit such strong emotions?
Yeah, well, you know, people get angry around politics for the same reasons they get angry around lots of things. People get angry when they are treated unfairly or treated poorly, when someone they care about is treated unfairly or poorly, or when their goals are blocked. And because leaders, politicians, and others have so much power over us to treat people unfairly or poorly, to block people's goals, people are likely to experience anger around those things.
I wonder, what place do you think does anger have in our society? I mean, should we welcome anger into our elections process, or does that common good depend on us from suppressing those strong emotions or excluding anger?
Yeah, I think it's really, really important when we have these conversations to talk about and acknowledge the difference between the emotion of anger and the things people often do when they are angry, meaning the violence you alluded to before, the potential for violence and other forms of aggression. I think it's completely understandable that people would become angry throughout the political process. I do think there are lots of things that politicians do that increase that anger, and we should talk about those things. But I do think it makes perfect sense that people would get angry. Elected officials and other leaders have the potential to really demonstrably impact people's lives in negative ways. And when that happens, or when there's the potential for that, it's hard to imagine not getting angry.
How much does anger motivate people to go vote? Does it actually boost political participation?
It absolutely does. And we've known this for quite a while. So in 2012, researcher basically found that an ad designed to make someone angry was twice as likely to get a click. This is an online ad. Twice as likely to get a click than one that was more neutral. And so if you just think about that purely from an economic perspective, if you're a campaign manager, it makes sense that you would try and elicit that emotion from people. It basically means that your ad is going to be more effective. It's going to encourage people to get out to the polls. At the heart of it are emotions, whether we're talking about anger or fear or even something else. They're motivators. That's a big part of what they do for us. So the same way my, hunger encourages me to eat, or my thirst encourages me to drink, my anger motivates me to try and change.
That basic. I'm wondering, there was the survey, the University of Colorado Boulder study last year, showing angry politicians create angry voters. Why might politicians and their campaigns want to create angry voters?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things that are happening here. One is what we were just talking about how anger is a motivator. If you're an angry politician and you want to get your people to the polls, it makes sense to rile them up as much as you can. And I also think it's worth noting, that isn't just happening around elections. That happens around other sorts of events. It's riling people up to protest. It's riling people up to go to city council meetings or school board meetings. That's an approach and a strategy politicians are using. The other piece of this, though, is the modeling element, meaning that if you're a leader who tends to express your anger in a really aggressive, hostile way, that motivates your supporters to also express their anger in that hostile, aggressive way.
So there is a mere reflection going on there. Can the politician go too far in riling people up?
Oh, I absolutely think so. I mean, I think the last few years has definitely shown us how quickly anger can turn to violence, especially when people aren't necessarily trying to stop that violence or aren't working hard enough to rein that in and pull that back.
Mm. We're talking about the psychology behind anger toward politics. And during election time, we have anger researcher in UW Green Bay, psychology professor Ryan Martin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's listen to a clip here. UW Madison journalism and mass communications professor Kathleen Culver recently was on Central Time to talk about political ads this election cycle. And you mentioned the click on ads. Here's Culver talking about the use of fear in political ads.
We as citizens are right to question these kinds of ads and ask, what is it that someone is trying to stoke in me? You know, what does it mean that someone is playing to my fears and how might that affect my vote?
Can you walk us through how closely related are fear and anger?
Yeah, that's a great question, and she makes a great point. I think that, first of all, anger and fear are very, very closely related. In some ways, they're sort of, first of all, they feel physically very similar to one another. You know, one of the probably the biggest difference is the provocation, the thing that brings it out of us. And a lot of that has to do even with our own perceptions. And really, you know, we get scared when we think we are in danger. We get angry when we think we have been treated unfairly or poorly or experienced this injustice. And I think, though, that ultimately both of those, the desire to provoke those feelings sort of come from the same place. It's about motivating people to do the things we want to do. And I think she's correct that we want to be aware of why someone is trying to stoke that fire within us, in what way they're using that to manipulate us.
Is there a link between anger and political bias? Like, how much can anger influence what we want to hear? What information that, you know, boosts our current outlook, or, you know, what we would rather not address? I mean, what is the link between political bias?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things we really have to pay attention here. Now, I started out by saying we get angry over politics for very similar reasons as anything else, and that is absolutely true. I think there's a couple of things we really have to pay attention to coming from the politicians who are trying to manipulate our emotions. One is the tendency for exaggerated claims or even just flat out dishonesty, and the way in which that can impact or affect people's emotional experience. And so those claims that people make about themselves or about their opponents really are driving up that anger. And people then aren't reacting necessarily with accurate information in mind. The other piece is, I think, related to what you were just saying, the selective attention piece, that we aren't paying attention to the full story. And social media has made this so much worse that people are living in this echo chamber. And so, again, they're reacting to a very, very small version of what might be really going on. And it's being fed not just by the politician, but by their peers. And the social media algorithms that tend to drive that anger. A final thought too related to this is this tendency to feel really isolated around elections. You know, one of the interesting things that happens during an election is you get essentially a real live count of how many people out there agree or disagree with you. And it can, I think, feel really isolating and really frustrating to find yourself living in a place where, you know, you see so many other people who feel so differently than you do about matters that are really important.
Hmm. Let's take a call now. Mark in Door County. Mark, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Very interesting this morning. My question is, I'm getting fed up with the angry ads, the calls for violence and such. Is this eventually going to blow back where people like me just say, that's enough? I'm not going to vote for anybody that's trying to scare the hell out of me anymore.
Mark, thank you. What do you make of that sentiment, Ryan?
Yeah, I think it's a common sentiment. I mean, I absolutely think it is. In fact, most people I hear say something similar, which is I'm fed up and I'm tired. I think the problem is that, and the reason I'm not optimistic that it's going to come to an end anytime soon is because I think they've got evidence that it works and that it encourages people to go to the polls in the way they want them to. And so I think as long as it continues to work, and as long as it's allowed, people are going to keep using it.
UW Green Bay psychology professor Ryan Martin researches our anger tendencies, what that means for politics, Wisconsin politics. Join in on why we get mad, how you think we can use anger as a force for good in government and politics. 800-642-1234. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We talk about the consequences of anger ahead of tomorrow's midterm elections. President Joe Biden, in a speech near the Capitol Wednesday, said the midterms are a defining moment for democracy and condemned people who spread false information about the 2020 election.
Lies of conspiracy and malice, lies repeated over and over to generate a cycle of anger, hate, vitriol, and even violence.
Join in on political anger, the state of democracy, 800-642-1234. We have anger researcher, psychologist Ryan Martin, who stays with us. Ryan, reflecting on anger and violence and what happened to Paul Pelosi, husband of U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, attacked with a hammer by a person with political motivations. How concerned should people be that anger in politics drives toward violence?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should be very concerned. Stories like that, stories like things like January 6th, those are real and they're frightening. And oftentimes they are driven by anger and they are driven by misinformation. And they are also driven, though, by, I think, a strategy and a willingness to be violent. And so I think one of the things, you know, anger doesn't always and doesn't even often lead to violence. There's lots of ways to express anger that aren't aggressive and that aren't even necessarily hostile. And so it's more than anger. It's a willingness to do things like use your anger in a way that hurts someone.
How can you turn anger into a force for good? What do you see there? Can it be a positive tool?
Yeah, it absolutely can. And we have seen that time and time again, that anger is often a motivator behind protests and by real, you know, social change and efforts for social change. And so, I mean, I think that the emotion itself in some ways gets a bad rap. This is one of the most important things I would say is that I don't know that people necessarily want to reduce their anger over politics. I think that election results have very, very real consequences, and it's okay for people to be angry about those consequences. I think what matters more is how they tend to express that anger. Is that anger going to be productive? Is it going to be healthy for them? Is it going to be healthy for the people around them? And I think what we've been seeing lately is a willingness to use violence as a means of getting what you want instead of trying to move toward some of those more productive approaches.
Let's take another call. Nate is joining us from Milwaukee. Nate, hi, what's on your mind?
Hi, thank you very much for having me. One of the things you'd mentioned about misleading people and using their anger, I was going to say that I think it's a very good thing that we have fact-checking organizations so that when political figures say things, we can try to figure out if it's true or not. If you don't mind me using an example, September 16th, PolitiFact titled Green Energy Policies Didn't Cause Record Prices at Gasoline Pumps, when PolitiFact rated a comment of Ron Johnson's mostly false about why prices were going up, and he was blaming Biden. And I look at this and I think this is scapegoating, where there is a problem and you end up having two issues with scapegoating being unhelpful, because if you're lying about the main cause of the problem, you're not fixing the gas prices in the first place. In the meantime, you are directing anger towards people who are actually trying to address a real problem and hampering their efforts.
Mm-hmm.
And so people really should be aware of scapegoating. And I think fact-checking is one of the ways where you can make sure that's not going on, or if it is going on, how is it being done potentially?
Nate, thank you for that. Ryan, what are your reflections there on scapegoating?
Yeah, I agree with this caller 1,000%. I think that people need to do the work. There should be an obligation that we are reacting to accurate information. And I think one of the things we've seen over the last few years is a lot of anger emerging because of people believing false claims. And I think that if you find yourself feeling angry, especially over information you've learned via ads or via social media, I think you've got to do the work of making sure that information is accurate. And to the caller's point, there are relatively easy ways of doing that work. I understand not everybody is going to believe the fact-checking orgs and so on, but still, there are relatively easy ways of doing that work, because that is those exaggerated claims or even those flat-out lies. And I think the other thing I would say about the caller's point, which I think is a really good one, is, you know, anger on some level exists to alert us to the fact that there is a problem. And the caller's point that, you know, if we're angry over the wrong thing, and or if we don't understand the nature of that problem, we aren't directing the resources we need to help solve it.
Can we just spend a moment here on social media platforms, their role, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, just aren't they reflecting who we are, what we think, and the divisions that are already there among us? What is the role of these platforms for elevating anger?
Yeah, I think that they really, social media platforms do a lot of things when it comes to our emotions. One is that they give us a lot of information to react to. I think we become aware of provocations that we might not have been aware of, say 15 or 20 years ago, because our social media feed is directing them to us. They also elevate a lot of those exaggerated claims or those lies. That misinformation ends up being in our radar in ways that it maybe wouldn't have been 20 years ago. But the other thing is that it provides people a venue to express their emotions. And so we see that it sort of feeds itself in this troubling way, that, you know, not only am I taking in information that way, but I could potentially express my emotions that way as well. It really, I think, honestly, it puts a lot of responsibility on the user to, again, do the work of making sure they're reacting to that accurate information, making sure that those false claims, that they're catching those false claims.
Some would say, oh, just disengage from social media, ignore it. And I'm wondering if that is practical advice. I mean, can you disengage without disengaging from the political process?
You know, I think that is not necessarily practical advice. I mean, I think people can choose how much media they want to consume. And I think that we should make healthy decisions for ourselves around how much media we want to consume. It feels almost impossible because it's not just social media. It's television, it's Hulu, it's anywhere that there are ads. that ended up feeding that. So I don't know how practical it is in a lot of ways. But that said, I mean, I think that I don't know if it's practical to completely disengage. And I also think that, you know, you may not want to completely disengage, especially if you're someone who believes in the value of democracy and wanting to participate in the process. But that said, we can make informed choices about who we follow and who we're paying attention to and how much time we're spending there and what it's doing to us.
It's so tempting to stay glued to social media or TV or radio for the latest updates on election news on election night. How do you balance that craving with your normal routine on a Tuesday? What advice do you have?
Yeah, you know, I think that, first of all, I think be aware of what that time is doing to you and how it's impacting you. And, you know, and whether or not there's anything you can do with that information. You know, I voted a few days ago, and because I voted early, you know, I'm at a point now where I'm not really paying attention to a lot of that stuff because it doesn't necessarily, it doesn't matter to me in my vote at this point. I think so, be aware of what impact that is having on you and whether or not it's good for you and whether or not it's necessary. Final thing I'd say, though, is that a lot of the tried and true approaches for dealing with anger more generally are still going to work here, right? The deep breathing, the relaxation, the finding a pause before you respond to things, grounding, all those things are still valuable and can help work if you want to reduce your anger in that moment. And I say that even when that anger is justified, those basic approaches are still going to work for people.
Ryan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ryan Martin is a professor of psychology at UW Green Bay. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.